This edition of the week is sponsored by Invitrogen. Gibco Cell Culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels. Welcome to The Week, the weekly news podcast from The Scientist. Senior editor Brendan Marr talks with Nobel laureate Paul Greengard and Per Svenningsson about antidepressants, neuropsychiatric disorders, and drugs of abuse and addiction. Greengard says all of these conditions appear to act in the brain through a single regulator, DARP-32.
It plays its broad role because it mediates the actions of many neurotransmitters on many physiological readouts.
Greengard and Svenningsson write about DARP-32's widespread influence in the brain in the October issue of The Scientist, which features a focus on neuroscience. Also in the October issue, a white paper by a lay European citizens group outlines its concerns over the future of brain science. And two articles discuss how to record activity in single-ion channels, including a guide to improving patch clamping techniques from one of the leaders in the field. First, staff writer Carrie Grins has this from The Scientist Daily News.
Scientists in the UK have found evidence supporting the evolutionary theory of punctuated equilibrium. The theory, which states that while evolution typically happens slowly, short bursts of rapid evolution associated with speciation occur, was introduced in the 1970s by Stephen Jay Gould and Niles Eldridge, and it has been a contentious topic among evolutionary biologists and paleontologists since. As Melissa Lee Phillips reports in The Scientist Daily News, researchers at the University of Reading examined phylogenetic trees across kingdoms and found many instances of punctuated equilibrium. Previous examinations typically looked only at fossil records, but using genetic sequences, the researchers saw rapid evolution associated with speciation in animals, plants, and fungi. Lead author Mark Pagel found the occurrence surprisingly common. About a third of phylogenetic trees displayed evidence of punctuated evolution, and it was responsible for over a fifth of all nucleotide changes. Pagel suggests that the results could mean other studies may have misdated some evolutionary events. Douglas Fatuma of the State University of New York points out a potential flaw in the study. It did not account for extinction rates in the calculation of the total number of speciation events. But despite the limitation, he added that Pagel's evidence for punctuated equilibrium warrants more attention. He said, quote, "These kinds of events could really undo any notion of a molecular clock." You can read the full report on our website, www.thescientist.com. Next, we hear from Paul Greengard, Per Svenningsson, and senior editor Brendan Marr.
I'm talking today with Paul Greengard of Rockefeller University and Per Svenningsson of the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, and also at Rockefeller. Dr. Svenningsson, how did you come upon P11's involvement in the mechanisms by which Prozac works?
There are multiple receptors that are important in mediating effects of serotonin, and we try to identify proteins that are important in regulating the efficacy of these receptors. And we then found P11 as one of those proteins. And then we were fortunate to find out that P11 is regulated by various antidepressant treatments. And we also have evidence that Prozac or fluoxetine is one of the treatments that regulates P11. And then we also found that P11 is downregulated in animal models of depression. So we had a very rational approach, but we were also a little bit lucky to find this interesting protein.
Where do you see this work taking you next?
Right now, we are very interested to see if we can also find the P11 levels, for example, in human materials, and if there are some genetics that can confirm that there is an association between depression and P11. And we are also interested to study diseases that are related to depression, such as anxiety, and see if there is also aberrations in P11 function in such models. That's some of the things that we're doing.
And this is connected through the serotonin system?
Yes, but we should also mention that P11 interacts with other proteins. So we don't know whether all the effects that we see, for example, in mouse models of where we have lack P11 are due to serotonin. It may also be due to actions via ion channels that also interact with P11. So it may turn out to be a quite complex picture.
There are a number of other interesting avenues that we are pursuing. For example, we're studying the specific region in the brain where elevation of P11 produces its antidepressant activity. We're interested in knowing the mechanism by which the antidepressants increase the level of P11. We're interested in knowing how the P11 causes a movement of the serotonin receptors from the interior of the cell to the surface of the cell, which is the mechanism by which it increases serotonin signaling. One way that my colleagues and I look at this and this antidepressant action is the following, that all of the currently existing antidepressant agents increase the amount of serotonin in the synaptic cleft between the nerve cells. And, for example, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the tricyclic antidepressants, monoamine oxidase inhibitors, and electrical shock therapy all increase serotonin signaling. In the presence of a fixed amount of receptor, what the P11 does is increase the amount of receptor in the presence of a fixed amount of P11. It was for that reason that we felt that it would be interesting to evaluate P11 as a possible antidepressant agent.
You write in our magazine this month about DARP32's involvement in depression, but also several other pathologies. How does this protein work as such a master regulator?
There are many neurotransmitters that control the state of phosphorylation of DARP32, and the state of phosphorylation of DARP32 in turn determines the ability of some key enzymes, protein kinases and protein phosphatases, to control the state of phosphorylation of their substrates, and this includes a large number of important, physiologically important components such as receptors for neurotransmitters, voltage-gated ion channels, transcription factors, ion pumps, and so on. So it plays this broad role because it mediates the actions of many neurotransmitters on many physiological readouts. And therefore, it plays a role in a large number of signaling pathways in the brain.
So what would you say has been kind of the greatest challenge of this work?
Well, the challenges have changed over the last 20-plus years since we found this compound. Now, one of the challenges is to understand we found many pathways that are regulated by DARP32. We're trying to find out now, with the ones we haven't studied yet, which of those are also regulated by DARP32, which neurotransmitters work through the DARP32 system, and which pharmacological agents work through the DARP32 system. That's a pretty big task. Mm-hmm. There is evidence, for example, that DARP32 is implicated in certain kinds of diseases. Perhaps, Pierre, you could talk about that a bit.
So, for example, we have a lot of evidence, especially from work in animal models, that DARP32 is implicated in actions of several different drugs of abuse. Essentially, all drugs of abuse that we know about regulates the phosphorylation of DARP32, and when we do studies in animal models, it also turns out that DARP32 mediates actions, for example, on how animals self-administer a drug like cocaine. And then we have also implications, and we have data indicating that the DARP32 levels can be changed in certain disease states. So, for example, in schizophrenia, it's known to be a disease with a lot of dysfunctions in prefrontal cortex. And we found that the levels of DARP32 in postmortem human brains from patients who suffer from schizophrenia is reduced. So we also have some indications that DARP32 is important also in the human condition.
No, I really want to thank you for taking some time to talk with me.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
This was Paul Greengard of Rockefeller University and Per Svenningsson of Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, and at Rockefeller University. And this is Brendan Maher for The Scientist.
Join us online at www.the-scientist.com for more of The Scientist Daily News, blogs on current events, a survey on the Bush administration, and features from our October print edition. This edition of The Week was brought to you by Invitrogen. Gibco cell culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.